Genesis chapter 6. Let's begin reading in verse 9, and let's go ahead and read through the remainder of the chapter, Genesis 6 and verse 9. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, The end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shalt thou make in the ark, and shall pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it of. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. A window shalt thou make in the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above. And the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. And behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. But with thee will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons, and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee, and of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark, to keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female, of fowls after their kind, and of cattle after their kind, every creeping thing of the earth after his kind. Two of every sort shall come in unto thee, to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is taken. Thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. All right. I'm hoping we can make it through this. We'll stop whenever my voice does, but in the meantime, we'll just press on here. So obviously now, having read that passage, we've come to the place in our study in Genesis where the world has populated. We're some 1,500 years in now to human history. There's a sizable population in the earth, and the earth, thanks, I don't have room for another one, but thank you. I will use that when this one's gone. And as verse 12 says, God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. So God is going to bring an end to this corrupt situation that we've been looking at. And it's not just an issue of moral corruption. There is physical and genetic corruptions going on here that we've talked about in this study. And what we've got here, beginning in verse 9, is another one of these books of generations. And these are the generations of Noah. And Noah, I know this is annoying, I apologize. It's annoying to me too. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And what we're beginning to see here now is a continuation of these two paths that we began seeing, particularly with Cain and Abel. And this, you see here how Noah walked with God, and all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. So there's these two paths again that we're seeing here, and we're seeing God dealing with that. Come with me to the book of Job and chapter 28. Job chapter 28. These two paths. You know, people look at that and they say there's all of these roads that you can take. And all roads lead to God and those kinds of things. We've all heard. And we've been seeing these, that what there actually is there's two ways to go. There is God's way, and then there is man's way, the world's way. And the world's way is made up of many different paths, but really, in the end, it's one. And you follow these two paths as we're following this seed line through the Bible. You see these two paths. And particularly in Genesis 6 and 7, with the flood, God is showing his attitude toward these two paths, the path of man, the path of the world, and walking with God, God's path. Here in Job chapter 28, Job says, "Surely there's a vein for the silver, and a place for gold where they find it. Iron is taken out of the earth, and brass is molten out of the stone." The passage goes down, and I'm going to shorten what I'm reading here. Look, drop to verse 12. This passage is talking about the wisdom of God, and particularly in creation. And verse 12 says, "Where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man knoweth not the price thereof." So it talks about the place of wisdom and the path of understanding. If you back up a little bit, look at verse 7. "There is a path which no fowl knoweth, and which the vulture's eye hath not seen, and the lion's whelps have not trodden it, nor the fierce lion passed by it." This path of wisdom that we see through the Bible, we've been talking about how that all of our understanding and all of our knowledge comes by revelation from God, which is here, written. Anything else is uncertain at best, and as we're seeing in Genesis 6, corrupt at worst. This path that the vulture hasn't seen, look in verse 26. "When he made a decree," God did, "for the rain, and a way for the lightning of thunder, then did he see it," God saw this path, "and declare it. He prepared it, yea, and searched it out. And unto man he said, Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding." Now that, verse 26 there, when he made a decree for the rain. Well, when did that happen? Well, that's our passage in Genesis chapter 6. It doesn't rain before that. So what God is doing there in Genesis 6 and 7 is he is declaring this path and the difference between the two. Noah walked with God. All flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And what you're seeing there is you're seeing how God deals with these two paths. The Lord said, he talked about them. He said, there's two roads. There's that broad way and there's the narrow way. And the broad way, many find it. The vast majority take that way. And where does it lead? It leads to destruction. That's what we're about to see in Genesis. That narrow way, few there be. That's Noah and seven people that were with him. Few there be that find it, and it leads to life. So Noah is about to get saved, preserved. The rest are headed for destruction. That's those two ways. We won't look at all the verses. I'll tell you what, we'll get one. Come to the book of Acts. I'll tell you what, before that, on our way, just stop at Proverbs chapter 4. And then we're going to go to Acts 18. Proverbs chapter 4. This way of God, when Paul was answering for himself, he said, when I first started out, Saul of Tarsus, I persecuted this way. Now he's walking in that way. He says, this way that they call heresy is the way I now worship God. He changed paths. Now, of course, that way kind of progresses over time. It's the same path. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's what Job just said. The fear of the Lord is the beginning. That's where you start. Then that path progresses. It progresses through the Word of God. Proverbs chapter 4. Verse 18. I'll tell you what, back up. Verse 14. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. For they sleep not, except they've done mischief. And their sleep is taken away, unless they cause some to fall. You know, that's the funny thing about that wickedness and people who are on that path. They're not content to be on it alone, right? They've got the Lord told those folks, you search, scour heaven and earth to find one proselyte, and once you do, you make them twofold more the child of hell than yourself. They don't sleep until they've pulled someone else in. And you know, this wickedness that we're talking about, it's not just the drunk in the gutter or the guy in the brothel, or it's this religious crowd. It started, these two paths are Cain and Abel. The way of God and the corrupt way. The religious way and the truth. They don't sleep except they've done mischief, verse 16. And their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Well, that's what we got going on in Genesis 6. The world is filled with violence. Turn on the news today. Where's the global violence coming from? But from religion. And our day is not unique. We understand that, right? Today it's this religion. 300 years ago, it's that religion. Before that, something else. It's the same path. It's all the same path. Bloody Mary was not a Muslim. She wasn't a Christian either. But verse 18, the path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. So that path, the path of the just, Solomon says, it's like a shining light that shines more and more unto the perfect day. So that path, come with me to Acts 18, gets brighter as we follow it through the Bible. Hopefully it gets brighter as you follow it through your life. Paul said, I persecuted this way. Now, I worship according to this way. Now, of course, Paul was a little further along the way, wasn't he? Closer to that perfect day. So that path, that light shines brighter and brighter as it goes. As you're following that path through the Bible, you want to follow that progression of light. You don't want to get stuck back in backwards on that path, because what happens is that as the light gets brighter, as the revelation progresses, that path behind you becomes darkness now. And it merges itself with the other path, because what God leaves behind, Satan picks up. We all know that. Acts 18, 24, "And a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria, an eloquent man, and mighty in the scriptures, came to Ephesus. This man was instructed in the way of the Lord." He was in the way, on the path. "And being fervent in spirit, he spake and taught diligently the things of the Lord, knowing only the baptism of John. And he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, whom when Aquila and Priscilla had heard, they took him unto them, and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly." See, bring them on the way. Bring them more and more, right? The light shines more and more to the perfect day. So they take this man who's on the way, and they bring him along closer to that perfection. Paul, before the revelation was complete, he said, "We see through a glass darkly. We know in part. We prophesy in part. When that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away." So that's what we're doing. We're on this path. You're here this morning. You've chosen that right way. But we're moving. And we're progressing, and we're following God on this path, and following that brightening light and to this perfect day. You and I are in the perfect day. Paul said, "When that which is perfect is come, that which is in part shall be done away." And that which is in part was done away going on 2,000 years ago. The revelation's complete. We're in the perfect day. I know, obviously I'm not feeling so perfect, and I'm sure you're probably not either in your life. But we're in the perfect day. Amen. The revelation is complete. This is where the road has been leading. Yeah, there's still sin in the world, but this is the beginning of the reconciliation. This dispensation that you and I live in today. You know, Job, we just read Job say that back there in Genesis 6 when God decreed the way for the rain. He declared this path. Now, how did he declare it? Well, Peter says that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. How does he know that? Doesn't say anything in our passage about Noah preaching anything. Nothing says that Noah was a preacher until Peter tells you so. Except that passage we just read in Job. It says that God declared it back there. How does God declare it? How does he declare it today? Through people who are on the way. Through you. And keep that in mind. We need to understand where we are in God's history here. Who we are. What we've been given to be and to do. This path you're on is a narrow one.
You're in an elite club. God has given that to you. So back in Genesis 6, we're seeing this terrible and wonderful demonstration of these two paths and where they lead. One to life and the other to destruction. Genesis 6 again, verse 13, God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." So the earth is filled with violence, and we touched on this briefly before, as I recall. But what we're doing here also is we're coming into this fourth, you're seeing the setup for the fourth divine institution, the institution of civil government. And what you've got here is you've got a situation of anarchy. Everyone doing what's right in his own mind. And what that leads to, of course, is this violence, lawlessness. And that's Satan's goal. You'll hear when Paul talks about the mystery of iniquity, you'll hear that called the mystery of lawlessness. That's the idea there. That's what's happening here. There's no protection other than survival of the fittest, and there are some people here who are more fit for survival than your normal human beings. So it's not a good situation. You've got these giants and these mighty men, and the earth is filled with violence. So God needs to bring an end to this situation. And he says, "Behold, I will destroy them with the earth." So God is going to destroy man, but he's also going to create a new order. A new order with the earth and with heaven as well. And there's about to be some changes here in both that we'll see some of as we go through. And Peter talks about the heaven and earth that were then and the heaven and earth that are now. And they're different. So God's going to destroy the earth, and he's going to destroy man with it. So what should Noah do? "Make thee an ark of gopher wood. Rooms shalt thou make in the ark, and shalt pitch it within and without with pitch." So Noah, make a boat. Now God hasn't said yet how he's going to destroy all flesh. But Noah's getting a clue here, isn't he? "Make an ark." An ark of gopher wood. Nobody knows what gopher wood is. That word there is actually a transliteration of the Hebrew, gopher. They left it that way because they don't know what gopher wood is. But Noah knew what it was. So God says, "Make the ark out of this gopher wood and put rooms in it." And the idea there is stalls. "And pitch it within and without with pitch." That's to waterproof it. You process tree sap and you make pitch out of it. "Within and without. And this is the fashion which thou shalt make it of. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. The breadth of it 50 cubits. The height of it 30 cubits." And we've talked about a cubit already, and that's it's the length of your forearm from your elbow to your hand. Generally about 18 inches, a foot and a half or so. If you figure that way for a cubit, you'll be pretty close. So 300 cubits, we're looking at 450 feet. A football field is 300 feet long, right? 100 yards. So this is a football field and a half now. And what it is, it's 450 feet by 75 feet wide by 45 feet high. This is an enormous, it would fill a football stadium and then stretch beyond that. And what it is, it's not, you see pictures of Noah's Ark and it looks like a boat, right? This isn't a boat, it's a box. So if the dimensions were equal, it'd be a cube. It's a rectangle, square box. Because this thing isn't meant to be navigated. It's meant to float. That's all it needs to do. Noah's not going anywhere but up. That's the only direction he's concerned with. So, and when you build a box, you get the maximum use of the space rather than creating a hull and, you know, pointing the boat and those kinds of things. It's just a box. And it's got rooms, it's got stalls in it. It's 450 feet long, it's 75 feet wide, it's 45 feet high. It's got a window shalt thou make in the ark, which is good because he's about to put a bunch of animals in there, so I'm sure they appreciated the window. A window shalt thou make in the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above. So the window is up towards the, just a foot and a half short of the ceiling. And the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. So this is a three-story ship here, ark. Those dimensions, 450 feet long, and it's filled with rooms, stalls, all the way through. And God says in verse 17, you know, by the way, that ark we've been seeing in Abel, in the lamb that he brought, in him himself, types of Christ throughout this book of Genesis so far, this ark is one of those. The world, everything outside of this ark is about to be destroyed. You want to be saved? You get in the ark. This is, this ark, those three stories, God says, I've created my stories in the heaven. It talks about the third heaven, right? Paul talks about. And you're about to see man, not just man coming into this ark, but all of these animals. And all creation, as it were, is represented here, is going to be preserved and saved by this ark. That's the Lord Jesus Christ. He doesn't just save you and me. When you and I are manifest, the whole creation will be delivered through what Christ did, through his victory. That's what you're seeing typified here. Behold, I, verse 17, even I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and every living thing that is in the earth shall die. But with thee will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife, thy sons' wives with thee, eight people. Eight, you know, Peter points that out. He does it twice. Peter makes a point, and we're not turning to all of these passages. I'm sorry for my infirmity this morning, but twice Peter makes a point of saying there were eight people. Eight people were saved, he says, by water. The like figure whereunto baptism also doth now save us. And he calls Noah the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness. And that number eight is in the Bible is a new beginning. The number seven is a number of completion, of perfection. After that, is a new beginning. The Lord rose from the dead on the eighth day, as it were. The first day of the week is the day after the seventh. It's the eighth day. It's the new beginning. The dispensation of the fullness of times is counted by most as the eighth dispensation. You get the completion with the seven, and then you go beyond completion to the new beginning. So that's what you're seeing with Noah here. That's why he's here. Noah and Adam, we saw already when we talked about Adam, the parallels between that first beginning and this new beginning, and Adam and Noah. So Adam and his wife and his three sons and their wives. Verse 19, and every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort, shalt thou bring into the ark, and keep them alive with thee. They shall be male and female. So God is going to preserve not just the human beings here, but the animals as well. God does not want to recreate what he started. He wants to take the seed of it and preserve that and start again with it. He's not going to recreate man. He's not going to recreate these animals. He's going to preserve them in this ark, and he's going to start again with a new beginning. And of fowls after their kind, of cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. So, two by two, right? He marched in the animals two by two, remember that? He starts naming them off, but no unicorn. The unicorn didn't make it onto the ark. So we've got Noah is commanded to take these animals. Now, of course, you remember Adam, when he named the animals, it says that God brought them all to him, and he named them whatsoever he called the names. That was the name thereof. So now again, these animals, Noah doesn't need to go out hunting them. They're going to come two by two. And they're going to go up into that ark, and they're going to take their rooms and pick out their rooms. And of fowls, after their kind of cattle, after their kind of every creeping thing of the earth, after his kind. So all the bugs and whatnot too, right? We got to save the bugs. Do we really have to do that? Every creeping thing of the earth, after his kind, two of every sort, shall come unto thee to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten. Now we know what food is eaten. It comes from the herbs and from the fruit, right? And God says, take all of that food, take a store of food, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. So now we know that the animals still now, as we're going on to the ark, man and beast, are still vegetarian. Animals are not carnivorous at this point. They're going to be when they come off of this ark. And that's why I say to you that there's a new order that's getting ready to begin here. There are going to be genetic changes. There are going to be physiological changes. There are going to be changes in the very nature of these animals, and to a large extent of man. Geographical, topographical changes. The earth is going to be busted up and split open. The fountains of the great deep are going to come up. And this flood we're about to see here is not just the result of 40 days and 40 nights of rain. The windows of heaven are open, and the fountains of the great deep are burst out with water. And there's water coming from everywhere. And that makes some changes. It makes changes in the geography and the topography of the earth. Mountains are created and overthrown. Deserts are created that didn't exist before. And there are celestial changes. And changes from the perspective of beyond this planet. Because Peter talks about not just the earth that then was and the earth that is now, but the heaven and earth. So there are atmospheric changes, and there are changes even beyond that that are about to take place here. And this ark, now you want to think about this. We're not just talking about, you know, the water coming down and the level rising and picking this ark up, you know, above the water. Peter says that Noah and his family were saved by water. They were saved by the water. The water that is going to drown the rest of humanity actually lifted them up above the destruction. But this boat, I don't know what this gopher wood is, but it's not steel. This thing is not just gently, you know, rising with the water. There is upheaval that you and I can't even imagine coming on this earth from inside and from outside. And this little boat here, 450 feet long, survives that. Now, you wouldn't think it would. You look at your position in Christ, all the things you have to endure. See, there's divine power happening here, not just in the destruction, but in the preservation. God is going to put them in this ark, and he's going to seal them in. And they're not getting out, and they will not be destroyed. They will be preserved. In this earthen vessel that they're about to enter into here. God is going to hold that thing together. All of the animals, all of the food, 8 people. Thus did Noah. According to all that God commanded him, so did he. So, the ark is built. Takes about 100 years. Noah starts this when he's 500 years old. And in chapter 7, we're going to see him 600 years old when this flood comes. So, 100 years building this thing. Him and his sons with him, no doubt. And they're preparing. They're preparing for a destruction here. A destruction that is in many ways a picture of another destruction that's coming. When once again Isaiah says in that day the earth is going to reel to and fro like a drunkard. And God says, once more will I shake, not the earth only, but heaven also. And there is a universe quake that's about to happen here. It is the attitude of God toward those two paths. The one that leads to destruction, the one that leads to life. We'll leave it there. Do you have a question? Comment. Someone stop me from having to comment. Brady.
I went to a boat place where they make boats at in Wisconsin one time, and they make boats out of cypress wood, you know. They take it and they soak it in the water, and when it holds so much water, it stops swelling.
Mm-hmm.
They take the stain and put on it.
Yeah.
So here, maybe the gopher wood, which they make boats out of cypress tree, gopher and cypress is probably the same thing.
Cypress is a popular candidate for this gopher wood. A lot of people think it's cypress.
Right. And there was a lot of it. And the tree sap is the same as the stain we use, but the tree sap is better because it was plentiful back then.
Yeah, well, and it's a waterproofer.
It's a waterproof. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after they got so hard, when they waterproof it, it was floating and made it lighter. You know, it floated.
Yeah.
Probably, that's probably how he was able, when they turned the gopher wood, he was able to lift it because that cypress is heavy.
Yeah.
But when the water gets in it, it gets lighter. You know.
It's a lot of people, I think, probably if you rounded up the majority opinion, it would probably be cypress for that gopher wood. Yeah.
And another thing I was saying was that when they say you pissed it in and out with the cypress and then you make three stories, doesn't that sound like it was flat, but it was kind of like an anchor above in the water at the bottom? It was three pitched stories at the bottom. I mean, it just me. It seemed like it was pitched. You know, like the rudder at the bottom, it was kind of pitched so that it would stay afloat. Because if you put three stories with all the metal, it looked like it would tilt over.
Yeah, well, depending on... The dimensions themselves would keep it. It's only a tenth as high as it is long. It's only 30 cubits high. It's 300 cubits long. So it wasn't top heavy. Yeah, it was. The design is perfectly adequate for what it was meant to be. Yeah, but. Well, on the sea they might. On the sea they might have, but certainly not where Noah was.
I wonder
was.
How many people even knew what Noah was building.
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah, right.
And you had never had a flood like that. You wouldn't know what to expect.
Right, yeah, he's just building a giant box.
And, you know, I always assumed that Ark meant boat, but I guess it doesn't. It must just mean container or something, because the Ark of the Covenant is the same thing.
The Ark of the Covenant is a rectangle, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, Alex.
Yeah, in the millennium, the animals, the lion is going to lay down with the lamb, so maybe we're going back then to like it was with the cattle, all the animals, before they went into the ark.
Mm-hmm. That's how it was in the antediluvian world. They weren't eating each other. And
right.
They, and
no,
they,
I never thought about that, but yeah. That may be the reason that they're going to go back, that there won't be any... eating of flesh then.
Mm-hmm.
In the millennium there will be no eating of meat. I don't know.
Eventually we're going back to a vegetarian situation. Now in the millennium it's at least going to start heading back that way, if not be that way then. There's an issue of the sacrifices in the millennium that have to be eaten. But depending on the details of how all that works out, it's yes, the perfection is a vegetarian situation. Yeah.
The sacrifices will go on in the millennium. The Jews will go back.
I believe so. Yeah. It'll be a different system because sin offering is a different situation, but there will be a sacrificial system. I the way I see it, there will. Hey, Tracy. Oh, you're going to make me find that now, are you? Isaiah.
Note to self, be a little more specific.
This is what concordances are for. All you Bible scholars, the earth shall reel to and fro as a drunkard. It's Isaiah.
Left-hand page, left-hand column.
Yeah, I'm on the other side for... In my Bible, it's right-hand page, right-hand column, but I'm with you.
You'd think it would be late 60, wouldn't you,
Dave? Yeah, it's hard to tell because there's some of that stuff in the very beginning. Not for that one. Shaking heaven and earth is there, but that's in the minor prophets.
Forget. Before I shake not the earth, but heaven.
Right, right. That.
That's a different passage, yeah.
Oh,
well, I'll find it for you, Tracy. Okay. All right. I guess we're done. Thanks, y'all.
That would be Isaiah 24:20.
Thank you, sir. That's what we're all here for.
There goes your paycheck.
There it is, 24:20. Now I got to share the paycheck with Lewis.